I think my power just went out.
Your internet's still good. You got ghosts in the house.
Well, I don't know. No. Oh, it was that lamp that just blew out.
Sorry. Oh.
I was like, what the fuck? Did I just lose power? Okay, no, we're good.
Welcome to Depth and Distance, the podcast where we break down leadership, especially military leadership, into learnable, actionable skills and resources so that anybody can become a better leader, a great leader. And it's a little bit different this week because instead of something that has to do with our day-to-day lives, relating to people, communicating, managing, we're actually going to talk about what I think is the least utilized resource in the military, and that is your right to contact elected officials, specifically the staffers who work for your representatives or your senators. They have military and veteran affairs liaisons whose whole job it is to help when you need a little extra pressure applied here, a little extra access there, a little more information. And I'm so excited because today we have Skeeter McGavin, which is an alias, just FYI. She's a congressional staffer who is the military and veteran affairs liaison for a member of the House of Representatives. And she's going to talk to us about this amazing and yet underutilized resource that I think all leaders need to know about so that they can advocate for themselves, for policy, and for their people.
I'm trying to be my chillest version of myself because I feel like I'm meeting someone famous.
Oh, no, I'm not. I'm just some weirdo who films TikToks in her house, so.
We all are. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah. So, Skeeter McGavin, I am a congressional staffer. I work out of a district office, and I oversee all of the veterans and military casework for my district. So, all district offices, or all 435 members of Congress have a office in D.C. Staff there handles the broad scope, you know, the policy, the legislation, the writing on bills, amendments, etc. Then they have their district staff like me, the boots on the ground, gathering all of that qualitative data. And so when we're talking about casework and what like my main role is taking all of the themes that I'm finding in casework, being the liaison between a veteran and whatever agency it is that they're dealing with, and finding those reoccurring themes and bringing it up to D.C. so that they know what legislation we need to be going after, what do we need to be researching, do we need to draft something ourselves, is there something already on the floor, you know, things like that. So we work in tandem with one another.
Awesome. Does every member of the House of Representatives have a specific military and veterans affairs rep in their office?
Yeah. So all district offices are kind of almost mirror images of another in terms of the structure. So there's going to be, you know, a district director that oversees everything, a scheduler who deals with the scheduling. Thank God I don't have that job. And then caseworkers. And then so all, if it's a federal agency or something that constituents deal with, we call it an issue area. And so we all have our own separate issue areas. So I deal a lot with specifically veterans and military because it is such a big issue area. And then we have, you know, like a Social Security caseworker, a Medicare caseworker, an IRS caseworker, immigration caseworker. And so those sets of kind of issue areas are mirror images through whatever district office you're contacting. So whether you're in Maine or California, you can call up your congressional member and say, I need to speak with the veterans or military caseworker. And there'll be a specific person for you to chat with.
Cool. It's always nice to know there's like a real human on the other end of some of that. So I guess that leads me to one of my very first questions, which is specifically, I have a home of record, which is Virginia. Mm-hmm. I am currently stationed in Connecticut, but I vote and have my driver's license in Washington State. That's where I file taxes. If I had an issue, who do I contact? Which of those
places? I'm so happy you asked this question because it's like the biggest confusion. Not really going to be your home of record because that's where you're registered to vote. Typically for most members, at least most members that I am dealing with. But granted, I deal a lot with people who are either about to get out or are out or are thinking about getting back in terms of like percentage of caseworker dealing with someone like you who's active duty military, it's around maybe 20% of my casework. I also think that there's like a stigma against active duty. They're either scared to contact their congressperson or they don't know contact their congressperson. It is where you are registered to vote, because that is who is your congressional representative.
Okay. See, that's good to know, because I think at one point when I was in Rhode Island, I contacted Reed, Senator Reed. And I actually, they helped me out, but I don't.
No, now granted, like if you have, like, now we're not going to go in and check your voter registration or anything like that. So like, so normally if an active duty member were to call and say, I'm stationed in Connecticut, but my home of record is, you know, where your office is located and I'm having this issue. As long as they have an address in our district, they can fill out a release form, send a case out. So I would recommend typically going with your where you are registered to vote, but let's not be coy about not all 435 members of Congress do what they're supposed to. Not all their staff is good. And so if you are able to, if your home of record contact that congressional representative and you fill out the release form and it goes through. Because more often than not, because on our end, what we're doing is once you've filled out a privacy release form to set up a congressional inquiry is what it's called, we're sending the case off no matter where in the country it is sent from, whatever office, it's going to go through the exact same channel. So if you're Army, it's going to go to Army Pentagon. If you're Navy, it's going to go to Navy Pentagon. If you're Air Force, Air Force Pentagon. And now, Coast Guard's a little bit separate because they're out of the Department of Homeland Security, but all of those inquiries are going to go through the exact same channel. Sorry, my dog's over here whining. So, yeah.
Okay. So, I was so busy listening, I forgot my next question. See, this is why we edit. Does it make a difference if I contact the staff of a senator versus the staff of a representative?
Nope. So we all use the same with Senate offices. We all use the same congressional liaison channel. So we'll be submitting that inquiry through the exact same email channel.
And okay. It's
follow the exact same, kind of chain downward, as it were, at least for active duty members. It's going to start off right at the Pentagon and then it's going to get filtered down.
So when you're talking about, okay, we send this email, it says congressional inquiry. What kinds of issues can or should or do military members bring that are, I don't want to say worthy because I don't think there's necessarily worthy and unworthy, but that a congressional inquiry can actually help with?
I mean, we can inquire about anything, everything and anything. Let's say you're injured and you would like to be moved, stationed closer to home while you do your recovery or while you're waiting to be discharged. We can do an inquiry about that. If there's a holdup in a promotion, if there's a holdup in medical care and services, hell, if there's just bad living accommodations. I mean, literally anything like that, because we all know barracks are an issue. We all know that there are some infamous barracks around this country that, if you're a military member, as soon as you hear those words, you're like, that's where I'm stationed. So anything like that is sufficient to make a congressional inquiry about. Because for us as staffers, in terms of whether it is putting forth new legislation, implementing new administrative protocols, applying for funding under the National Defense Authorization Act, which is what we're currently doing right now, all of that qualitative data that we get helps us to get funding for that type of stuff, or helps us to fix these issues, these prevalent issues that are happening.
Okay, so sometimes you can use it for like a very specific kind of personal thing. I need mm-hmm. this to happen. It's I'm being slow rolled or ignored, and this can put pressure on like your chain of command, like mm-hmm. someone's watching. But also, it could be used for a bunch of service members to communicate kind of all at once, hey, we're your constituents and we need you to pay attention to this, for instance, something like the NDAA.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was actually just going over, we're getting ready to submit, it's March 31st is the deadline for us to submit our organizations or projects that we want for that NDAA funding, that community funding. And some of these projects or like the readiness center for National Guard or barracks at Fort Hood, you know, receiving, you know, this is tens of thousands of, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars per project for, so like the barracks at Fort Hood requested $1.26 million to construct housing facility for 500 unoccupied enlisted personnel to alleviate the 4,000 bed deficiency at Fort Hood. So like those types of requests are what we're putting in for NDAA. And because there is a lot of money out there for these types of services, and not just those big types of things, but, you know, like National Guard readiness centers. That's a big, big and TAPS program. So for active duty members getting out, like the planning for not just while you're in there and the care while you're in there, but the planning when you get out and what to do next is a really big step that service members take. So getting more funding for projects like that. So stuff like that, even reaching out to your congressperson being like, hey, I know the NDAA is coming up. I didn't know if you guys had a list of community partners that you were looking at. We had someone call up and ask to get put on the list just last week. And they actually were a really, really good fit as a community partner. And we added them to the list.
What's a community partner?
So just let me see how I can give you the exact wording of how they define it. That community project funding request. So eligible community projects request include military construction, unspecified minor military construction projects, planning and design for military departments, reserve components, defense-wide agencies, in addition, some reserve component projects that require state funding matches. Also, entities that, where did that go? There we go. So, and to be honest, a lot of entities fit under this NDAA request. And you can actually call up your congressperson and ask them to send you, hey, can you send me what the parameters are? And so at least leadership knows, like people who are in leadership positions within the military, no matter what branch it is, like, hey, oh, we can put a request in for funding this way. Oh, okay. Because I know that there's a lot of avenues and streams for funding when it comes to the military. So it's like, how do you access it and how do we make the most of it? So it doesn't just, not to say that military technology and weapons development isn't an essential part, but it's not the only part. You know, we've got to be thoughtful in our submission of who we're trying to get funding for.
Yeah. So if I am, you know, if I'm on a base that's lacking a facility, right? The gym is super run down or the barracks are really gross. And I want to be part of fixing that. One way, right, is to reach out directly to my staffer and say like, hey, this is something that's important to me. Please make sure that it's important to my elected officials. For what you're talking about, if we got together and sort of organizing is always kind of a scary word in the military, but, you know, and spoke with the base and said like, hey, we want you to think about this project and like, here are some avenues. Is that, can a base advocate for themselves? Can they say, hey, okay.
Absolutely. I don't see why not unless there's some holdup on the leadership end from the military, but I don't see why not. Why a specific fort or base couldn't reach out as the requester.
Okay. Very cool.
Yeah.
A lot of times when I in the past have heard about congressional inquiries, it's been in cases of NJP or criminal investigations, things like that. What role from either, you know, a victim or an accused do y'all play in that system?
So I don't want to say an advocate because that kind of implies that we have the capacity to like strong arm, or we kind of serve as a mediator. So for instance, with military sexual trauma, this is a good example because Biden just signed that executive order last year, removing the investigation of MST claims out of the chain of command, which common sense, it should have never been there in the first place.
Amen.
But it took us years and years of qualitative data to prove to legislatures that this needed to happen. And the only way it's going to happen is if by law. Like, it's not just going to happen administratively within these chains of command. Like, it has to happen through law. And so the kind of like preface I always give active members when they contact us is, just want to let you know, this is going to start off at the Pentagon. It's going to get filtered down. It'll eventually end up in your chain of command. So I always will ask, like, are you in a position where you might get reprisal? Are you, you know, do you think you might be a victim of reprisal if, you know, so I just want you to think about those steps, because I would like to say that as soon as you file a congressional inquiry, it's like a nice bubble gets put around you, you know, that, you know, can't, but that's not the reality of the situation, especially with the military, especially with toxic leadership within the military. So it's, I always recommend doing it in terms of, because you can also file them after discharge or after the issue has passed, if that is something that you feel more comfortable with. So it's not like, just because it doesn't happen in the present time doesn't mean you can't file the congressional inquiry. But I also don't want to give this idea that every congressional staffer is like me and has empathy or is good or passionate about their job, because I have met other staffers where it's they're just pushing buttons. I mean, they are literally, so it's, but there are staffers like me that are, and you can tell that in a phone call with them when you're chatting with them, like, okay. But there's also things, so we had an instance a couple of years ago, I believe it was a guardsman, where she had been court-martialed and dishonorably discharged. And she came to our office with, I mean, 500 pages of why she was the victim, of why, you know, what was going on, what would, you know, what was happening. And luckily, our liaisons with National Guard are very helpful, especially our local one here is very, you know, very transparent with us. Basically got on the phone like, yeah, we've got video evidence of, you know, everything that happened. So like, this is everything that has happened. We will work to uncover what's going on, but don't bring us bullshit is what, you know what I mean? Like, don't as a way to get out of, or to think that it's going to alleviate your, you know, your issue, because it won't. Types of medical issues or leadership issues, I definitely recommend doing it, because nothing's going to change. Nothing's going to change the chain of command until they're held accountable. And that sucks that we can't depend on sometimes these leadership to just be accountable, but that's what oversight and congressional, you know, congressional oversight is.
Yeah. Have you, do y'all work in any way with like the Inspector General?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So we will serve as kind of a mediator or a go-between, and they will report to us. They will give us updates. So yeah, we definitely will work with Office of Inspector Generals.
Okay. So there's a couple of kind of, if someone was having, say, an issue with a toxic leader, I don't know how closely you follow military news. We just had a commanding officer fired in the Navy for a myriad of things, including putting her hands on people. And one of the things that kind of came up in that was people had tried to say something and not a lot seemed to come from that. And so, you know, one of the routes you can take as a military member is the Inspector General. If you've kind of flown that flag and you're not seeing any traction, can you go again? Is that another time that you could go to your congressional rep and be like, look, I filed this thing. I have this very real problem. I need you to like apply some pressure to at least get some answers here.
Oh yeah. And even in those instances, we would apply even harder because you have already taken a myriad of steps beforehand before contacting our office and have still not been able to get any kind of resolution or answers. We would press even harder. At least I would.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and it's, I'm thinking about, as you talk about, you know, some people are more passionate, more involved in their job than others. That's kind of sort of the good reason that you have, you know, you have a senator, you have a rep. So you have
your options. If you're getting a shit response from your congressperson, you've got two U.S. senators who are doing the exact same thing that you can utilize.
Yeah, absolutely. What is, and I'm sure it varies by case, but if I call up, you know, I won't say who my people are, but because I do call them. But if I call them up and I say like, hey, this thing is happening, I'm not seeing any traction, no one's paying attention. And they say, great, here's the paperwork, file it out, whoosh, off it goes. What, you talk about it like trickling back down, that pressure trickling back down to my command. What is the timeline? Or like, how much does that vary in your experience?
It is very much case by case. And that's the one of the frustrating parts for me as a staffer is not being able to provide a solid timeline for like constituents on response back. It's like, I'll let you know once I hear something. But like typically Army, I would say all of the branches are immediate in there. All right, we've received this. We'll get, and then usually within 15 to 30 days, we're getting, this has been assigned to a team for investigation. Sometimes we'll give you like, this is your interim response. We'll usually get like an immediate response the same day that we sent it. And then we'll get about 15 to 30 days out. We'll get either a completed response or, hey, this is your interim response. We're expected another 30 days. I would say usually before I'm getting like a letterhead from either like Army Human Resource Command or Navy Personnel Command, it's usually around 30 to 45 days.
Okay.
But in that though, typically like once we get that response, I will always send it to, you know, send it to the member and be like, look through this. If there's any points that you can refute or that are not accurate or that you need clarification on, just email me back. Just make sure it's in writing. Email me back. I can always send a follow-up. So like, continue to send follow-ups for clarification or for dispute, you know, for as long as it takes. Like I currently have one case right now. It's been open since 2022 and it's a medical leave case. And it's, I've done, I mean, the email chain's probably 18 pages long.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, we go back and forth with the Pentagon as many times as it takes for you to get the clarification that you need or the resolution that you need. Now, granted, we can't wave a magic wand and make things happen, but we can do our damnedest to try.
Yeah. I mean, which is the best we're all doing, I think, at this point. Yeah. We can try.
And it just, it puts pressure on your chain of command because your chain of command has their own chain of command and they have their own chain of command and it goes through all of them. And so by the time it ends up on the member's chain of command's desk, yeah, they are going to now have their chain of command too.
And briefly, you talked about reprisal and reprisal is always like, it's sort of a tricky topic because obviously there's rules against it. But if you have to file a reprisal claim, it's just like, you're going back into the system, you know, starting at the beginning with a whole new thing again. When you think about sort of how you think about reprisal when things, you know, get all the way back down to the chain of command, have you ever told a military member basically like, we can, but it's not going to go well for you?
If there have been so many instances of so many back and forth with the liaison, like if a liaison has to get on the phone to me and be like, hey, so this is what's going on. Like if they can't put it in writing, you know what I mean? Like if they're calling me, I will express that to that member. Be like, listen, we have taken this, I think, as far as we are able to. And sometimes it's just, we're stuck at a dead end. And sometimes that does happen.
Okay. I mean, nobody wants that answer, but I think a lot of the frustration comes in when people expect that magic wand and don't understand that, like,
right,
everyone's working in some kind of system.
Right. And I can't, like, trust me, I wish I could just be like, Department of Defense, out of all the agencies that I deal with, like, because with the VA, I have a little bit more capacity for, like, give and take and you know, to go back and forth and kind of be a bitch about things, right? Like, yeah. Like, no, that's not, I'm sorry, that is not an acceptable answer. I don't have room to do that. You know what I mean?
Sure. While we're talking about the VA, because I know I have not only some people who are veterans who listen, but I think every leader should be prepared not only to become a veteran, but to help their people become veterans.
That money. Access that money. That is monthly money that you are all due. Damn it. Take it.
I have seen from some of your TikToks, y'all, you know, trying to get involved in some of those VA processes. What if I come to you and I'm saying, you know, my disability rating's not coming back correctly, or I think I deserve more, or I need this kind of support. What kinds of things can you help with?
Oh, yeah.
Those two.
any type of thing like that, you can contact a congressional staffer. We can do the same thing. We can set up an inquiry. We can contact the VA regional office. Hey, we need clarification on why they only got rated. You know, they got rated at 60%, but they're only getting paid at 40. We need like, we need you to spell this out for us. Why is that? And that's exactly what the VA regional office liaison will do. Same thing with pretty much now, granted, we can't make them grant benefits that are not already there eligible by federal law, but there are mishaps that happen. I mean, humans work at the VA, you know, accidents do happen. You know, administratively, you might get like a debt bill where you're like, where did this come from? Like,
yeah,
contact a congressional staffer. We can get, to be honest, any of those questions that pop up in your head involving the VA, if you're just not sure, call your congressional staffer. Like, either we can answer it for you, or if it's something that needs to have a congressional inquiry done, we can, you know, because it's really easy. I feel like the word congressional inquiry also like scares people. They're like, oh, it's so scary. It's a fucking email. Like, it's literally, it's a fucking email. Like, sometimes I have to put a cover letterhead. Sometimes, like with the Navy, I have to do a letterhead on with the member's signature. They're the only ones who have to be difficult about things. Go figure. But yeah, it's an email. Like, we are contacting, we have set people, liaisons within every federal agency. Their whole job is just to respond to us. So we're like customer service on crack, like, you know, elevated.
If someone is just, I'm trying to think of the right way to phrase this. I'm also trying not to get in trouble on separate stuff though. If someone's having problems with like, say a lead time on a medical appointment, we know that that's a huge problem, both active duty side and VA. What does it help to call your staffer on that?
Oh, we'll fix that real quick. Those okay. are leave issues are actually one of the easier type issues to deal with active members. Making sure that people are getting either whether they're overseas or stateside, getting them back to where they need to go or getting them on their leave. Yeah. Those are really easy inquiries to do.
That's good to know. Okay. Because it just, all it does is put that extra eye on it, basically. Mm-hmm. And if they can't give you a good explanation, then
they gotta give us an explanation. They better give us a good one. Yeah,
absolutely. And you deal with, obviously, you see a wide variety of things coming through your office. What do you think most people either misunderstand or you wish they knew before they started the conversation with you?
So I have to give, and one of the things we actually as a trainer interns on is giving civics lessons. I have never once asked for someone's voting status or what party they are or who they voted for. The thing that people offer up more than anything is, all right, I didn't vote for your guy. I actually don't fucking like him at all. But it's like, cool. I don't care. What's your zip code? That's literally all I care about. What's your zip code? And I really wish people understood that just because you didn't vote for someone or you're a different party than, or maybe you just really like a great example, or even people like is a great example. Like, she is batshit crazy, but her district staff actually pretty good.
You know?
So
I'm from Georgia, so it makes me happy to hear that, you know, yeah. Someone is yeah.
So it doesn't matter, you know, and if you don't, we're not tracking you in any way, shape, or form. Like, the only information we're gathering, we're putting on our, like, it's our database. It's for our, you know, our record keeping. But, yeah, we're not asking you what party you are, who you voted for. If you've never voted before in your life, if you're not registered, I don't care. As long as you have a zip code in the district.
That's what counts.
We're here to serve you.
And you were talking earlier, people are hesitant sometimes to call you. I think if my read on military culture is correct, it's because we're like so conditioned to avoid anything that appears political. They really like to scare us with that rather than, you know, actually reviewing Hatch Act. But correct me if I'm wrong, reaching out to a congressional, you know, a district office, your elected officials, is protected communication.
Right? It's a constituent service. Like the main purpose of your elected members is to serve as your representation in Congress and vote on things and to provide constituent services. That is the whole role of a district office, is constituent services. There's a strict dichotomy between politician and elected official. So like, and it's hard to kind of cut through when we, you know, because the media talks about people in terms of Democrat and Republican, but like, we're one of the only blue members in a very, very, very red state. And I like every staffer that I work with. Our Senate offices are both red, work fabulous with those. Because we all realize that, at least us, the staffers in the offices, realize like teamwork makes the dream work. Like, we're just here to make sure people get services. One of the big things we do are called wrong district forwards. So a lot of the times people will contact, you know, our office because they'll see our member on TV or, you know, what have you. And they actually live in, you know, Ohio or something. And it's like, okay, so actually you've sent us all of these really important documents, you know, these original paperwork with, you know, social security number and everything on it. We're going to make sure we get you connected to your right representative. And so like, there's a standard communication between all district offices called wrong district forwards. Everyone will have a cover letter. Hey, your constituent actually sent this stuff to our office. Looks like based on their address, they're your, you know, and we have an accountability kind of structure there with making sure constituents get to the right representative, because you'd be very surprised at what people have no problem just putting in the mail and just with no context, no cover letter, no nothing.
Wouldn't be surprised. I've seen some weird things, but yeah, we're just, you know, we're just letting the PI fly out here. Are leaders allowed to contact like on behalf of someone? So either their member is nervous or, you know, I don't know, maybe their, you know, their member's staff is not great. Could like, if I have someone who works for me, they need help with something. They're registered to vote in Georgia. I'm registered to vote in Washington. Georgia's not helping them. You know, staff is not on fire today. Am I allowed to contact my person and be like, hey, I need help on behalf of someone else? Difficult.
I don't think so, because, you know, it's the, you know, age old saying, as soon as someone turns 18, they are their own autonomous individual, unless someone has power of attorney over them.
Okay.
And so now, if it's a member's well-being, I have had leaders reach out in terms of like doing wellness checks, like on behalf of. So that's something that can be done. But yeah, other than that, I don't think an office might take the inquiry, but I don't think the Pentagon would accept the inquiry. I think they would kick it back and say, this needs to come from the member, you know, requesting it.
Okay. That makes good sense. If I know these are all so hypothetical, if I then contacted Georgia and said, I'm not personally registered to vote, but I'm contacting you on behalf of someone, I guess to sign the privacy release forms and everything, they would eventually need that person to do something. Okay.
Yeah. To set up any kind of congressional inquiry, you have to sign, you have to fill out a privacy release form. Mm-hmm. And every member has that online, because I know at least with active members, if they're either going through boot camp or AIT, like their phone privileges are very limited. So getting on the phone with them sometimes just not an option. And so everyone can access a privacy release form for whatever member of Congress or the Senate through their website. They all will have a zip code authentication. You'll type in, now the Senate office doesn't because they have the whole state. Your congressperson will have like a zip code authenticator, and you can download the privacy release form right there. You can fill it out right there. You can submit it right through the website to avoid, you know, back and forth, like leaving a voicemail, playing phone tag for a week, you know, stuff like that.
Absolutely. You were just talking earlier about the NDAA, which I think is still the fiscal year
2024.
Because we're still on continuing resolutions.
Yeah.
In February, almost March. Thumbs up. Based on that, on other legislation that you've kind of seen being kicked around, being developed, how do you think like military leaders should be interacting with Congress, you know, to advocate for things or to kind of make their wants and needs known.
I would say a big thing, because we're actually getting ready to have, I don't think they call it storming the Hill anymore ever since January 6th, but where veteran service organizations will come up and do their, you know, their lobbying days or their legislative days. A lot of the, and I see this with leadership across the board, a lot of the times these are not effective meetings. They just want it's like they just want their picture. They just want, you know, their photo with the member. They don't actually want to talk with staff about, you know, it all is very, very superficial. And so in terms of actually getting impact, just calling that, getting connected with the right person in that office, whether now I typically with these types of things with funding would go with your DC office. Contact your DC office, because there will be a couple of different people handling veteran legislation or military legislation. Mm-hmm. But just connect with them on a, hey, I'm at this base. I just wanted to connect with someone in the office. Here are some of our concerns that are going on. Setting up meeting with staff is the best way for leadership to make sure that like their points are getting across, that everything's getting checked off and done. I mean, I know it's cool. Everyone wants to go to the Hill and, you know, none of those meetings are ever productive. And when they do meet with staff, like, I think it also, one of the things I have my own grind my ears type thing about this with these veteran service organizations like American Legion, DAV, BFW, is like the higher ups and the leadership, they get pissed if they only meet with staff. They think it's a waste of time. They think it's no one's listening to them. When in reality, like, you just wanted your fucking picture with the member. You didn't actually want to talk about legislation or what points you wanted to make. If you did, you would have told the staffer who is there ready to, who's the one actually drafting the legislation. Like, yeah. Congress do not draft their own legislation. Like, they are not at the computer typing up their amendments and then no.
No, you're breaking my heart, my belief in the American electorate.
I know.
I know what goes on there. No.
Because, like, even if a member of Congress is an absolute, like, twaddle, like, they could have an absolutely killer chief of staff or legislative director that's knocking out amazing legislation that you just, that's who you need to connect with.
And So the NDAA is coming up, or, you know, various laws, things that influence the military. If I, as a member, feel very strongly about, pick a controversial part of the NDAA, if you want, hang on, let me pick something less controversial, medium controversial. If I really strongly believe that women should have to sign up for selective service, the same as men, right? Because that comes up every year.
Mm-hmm.
So, like we talked about, one thing I can do is just, you know, call my staffer. This is important to me. I'm your constituent. And they'll note that as a point. If it's like my sole mission to get that put into legislation, that's who I'm looking for. It's like, I want you to connect me to who in this office is actually writing this. I want them to hear me say how important this is to me.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to do that?
Yeah. And I would like communication about ongoing efforts on this, or what is currently going on about this. Is there any movement? Can I get signed up for updates? Yeah. All of that stuff you can request.
Cool. I probably won't do that for the selective service thing, because that sounds like a lot of work for something that's low on my priority list, but someone out there maybe really cares. And there are, I assume, other issues, you know, for me. Mental health is a huge thing, quality of life and mental health policy in the military. And so these are channels that I could use to say, like, hey, you know, this is a place that we need to be looking at funding. This is, you know, something I need you to pay more attention to.
Yeah, because even a couple of years ago, we now, and I believe we got this legislation passed, was, I don't know if it's been implemented yet, but mandatory mental health screenings 6 months pre-discharge. So one of the things that my member has been focused on is the mental health portion of it, especially female mental health and dealing with the context of military sexual trauma, because that is shocking that how prevalent that it still is. One of those things, it's like, hey, I still, you know, if I read about it all the time, I study it, I'm in it. Still one of those things where it's like, I still can't wrap my head around how often it happens. And the implementing agencies or services pre-discharge. So like, you got your TAPS program, right? Like when you're ready to get out. But one of the issues with the TAPS program is it's very local, like centrified. So like, if you're getting discharged in Connecticut, all the information that you're going to be learning is going to be around in the area of Connecticut. And so like, what if you're moving to California? You need to be able to access. So that's another kind of thing that we are trying to work on legislatively, is to, how do we fix that administratively? Like, how do we reframe these programs to be a better fit for service members? Because the programs are there. They would be, get better taken advantage of if they were of higher quality.
I've had some friends go through TAPS, and they've had, I think, some of the varied experiences that you're talking about, where, you know, they were getting told stuff about an area, they were going somewhere else, or they were being told a lot of, like, so my husband was going back to school when he got out. And so he did the education track TAPS, but it was really focused on people going to undergrad, which he was going to a doctorate program. He was a little older. He had, you know, we were planning on having kids. It was just, he was in like a really different place. And so, yeah, kind of matching those up to the member a little more makes a big difference.
It does. TAPS is a great framework. It's just being able to kind of tweak it a little bit, and it needs funding to be able to do that. So yeah, that's definitely one of our big priorities, because if we're not tackling it pre-discharge, it's going to exacerbate itself post-discharge, and then dealing with the exacerbated levels of what we're already dealing with. So it's the same. It's the thing with like getting to the root cause of things and not just pulling the stem or the leaves, but like really getting in there and getting the root.
Yeah, absolutely. So
it's pre-discharge is what we're focused on with that.
And you said, you know, that started kind of a few years ago. What would you say, like long-term timeline wise, from when you start to see and really consider something a problem to when you see an effective move of the needle, what does that look like?
It would depend on how big the issue is. So it would depend on, because everything kind of falls down to appropriations, so even the best of ideas sometimes get to the wayside once appropriations gets put in the mix. So yeah, it's definitely a varied.
Yeah, a lot of it comes down to that NDAA every year.
It does. It really does. And there are so many pots of money. It's the same thing with like grant writing. It's like very niche and figuring out, okay, I've got to fill this out specifically so that it matches, you know, what have you, also in terms of like the types of congressional inquiries that active members can do. If you believe that your unit needs a citation or accommodation or something, and you filled out the proper like DA forms, and you're just not, you need like a support or what have you, that contact your congressperson. I'm doing one right now for our National Guard.
Very cool. Okay. Yeah. You guys are like the Swiss Army knife. All around tool.
Yeah.
And the underutilized all around tool.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to make sure that we highlight at least one really successful thing. So do you, in your time in the office, have something that went really, really well? You wanted to see a change, a military member, you know, or a veteran wanted to see a change, and you kind of like, you got it done. You got the victory.
So like one of the very first cases I ever took on, when I overtook the veterans casework, it was like, so like, this always still sticks in my mind because it was just such a like transformative thing. It was like realizing the actual power that I have as a caseworker. I had a veteran contact me. He was like, hey, I just got off of a 72-hour mandatory VA medical center, and I just got a bill for $14,000. Like, if I wasn't ready to off myself before, I'm about to now. And like, he was joking. And so I, of course, was like, oh my God, oh my God. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Literally within an hour of sending that inquiry, the medical center was like, oh my, this was an administrative error. He should have never have received this. Like, we are so sorry. And that forced, so like that one congressional inquiry that we were able to fix in a matter of like 24 hours for this guy. I was like, you can just throw that away. It doesn't mean anything. Like, you're fine. You can throw it away. Throw away that $14,000 bill. It was fake. It doesn't matter. Throw it away. But it forced the medical center to like kind of look at their database systems and their record keeping systems and their debt notification systems.
Yeah.
Because it was absolutely like an administrative error within their database. And so they were able to find other veterans that had actually been sent that same bill, but they just didn't know. Now, they never told me the amount of how many, so I don't know if it was one other veteran, 10 other veterans. I have no idea. But yeah, so that was one of the things where I was like, okay, shit, I can do things. Okay.
Yeah, that's like such a great early win to do. Yeah. Okay. Because I think one of the struggles, one of the other reasons that military members probably don't reach out as much about policy or other things is it can feel really defeating, really hopeless, where it's like everything takes forever, or, you know, the answers you get back are so unsatisfying. And so knowing that, like, okay, sometimes things get moving, sometimes mm-hmm. things happen. Yeah. If a military member wants to be more informed about legislation, a lot of what we receive about the laws that impact us is very passive. How would you suggest they go about, you know, being more informed, staying kind of more involved?
Congress.gov is probably like the most underutilized tool and probably one of the easiest and easy to navigate tools. Like, I'm a Luddite, and if I can navigate it, anyone can. So like Congress.gov allows you to, you can break it down by the specific bill, the amendment, the actual member. You can see exactly how they voted on things, what they added to, what they subtracted from. So like, you can make it very member specific if you want mm-hmm. to make it committee specific. You can make it, you know, your like what's passed, what's failed. So like Congress.gov is a great tool to kind of keep track of what people are putting or bringing to the floor. And then I also recommend getting connected with HVAC, the House Veteran Affairs Committee, House Veteran Affairs Committee, because they have really good outreach about what's going on, what's happening. And it's a good way for members to connect with what bills are being proposed. So I think a lot of people think like once a bill has been written up or like it's been proposed and there's no changing it. No, like we change that all the way to
moment, you know, before the vote.
Yes, literally. So I wish more people, because one head or two heads is better than one. Four is better than two. So like there might be a perspective or a way of thinking about things, or someone has experienced a different political, social, or landscape differently, like they're gonna offer a different insight. And that's the only way that we are truly a Congress, is if all the voices are voicing, you know, what they want to see happen.
Yeah. If my representatives or my senators are not on, you know, the like the Armed Services Committees, can they still be influential in things like the NDAA?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay. So I don't have to like try and like go on congress.gov and find those people and be like, you don't know me, but.
Yeah. No, yeah, you're a member there. But it also comes down to their staff and like right. what effort they are going to put into it. Because you might find a staff, oh, no, well, we don't do anything with armed services. Bitch, yes, you can. Just because you're not on the committee, yes, you can. Like, but you will, like. You know, that's why I love being a district staffer, because and I love our DC office, but and I'm going out to DC in April. But sometimes the attitude on the Hill, sometimes like people, they just get over yourself. You are not that important. We're all doing the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Similar feelings about, you know, DC versus everybody else in the military sometimes too. What advice or tips do you have? You have pretty much a direct channel to a few hundred military leaders. Most of us active duty. So we're mostly leading that 20% slice, but, you know, some impact on veterans and others. What advice, tips, you know, like what kind of message would you want to give them?
To utilize us more.
Yeah.
To utilize congressional staffers more. Let us help you move the needle on things, you know, and there's no like wrong way. Well, I guess there is a wrong way to approach us. Like, hey, fucker, like, can you, but you know what I mean? Like, there's
your congressional staffers.
Yeah. Like, whatever ideas that you're having, I think probably the biggest caveat is just like, which office do I go to, right? Like, which office? Now, in terms of things like that are base specific, so like Fort Hood, right? People that are stationed there, that's kind of an instance where I would reach out to both your congressperson where you were registered to vote, as well as the congressperson that oversees that district. But I feel like congressional staffers are an underutilized tool for military leadership. I feel like there's a like stigma about contacting your congressperson, but yeah, we're an elected official. We serve a very specific purpose, and that is constituent services. And yeah, like I love doing casework. I love sending stuff out to the Pentagon and being like, hey, I need an answer on this. Like,
Technically, the staffs are nonpartisan. Y'all don't switch out even if the member switches out?
Yes. Well, no, we do. So we're charged to one very specific member. So like if he were to not get elected again, the member coming in is their privilege to staff that office with who they want.
Okay.
So it is very member specific, but like you'll have, especially on the Hill, it's a lot different because you'll have like DOD fellows that get assigned. Or you'll have people, committee staffers who get assigned to, so that you could have a Republican working in a Democrat office and a Democrat working in a Republican office. So
one team, one fight, right?
It really is. Like at the end of the day, the only fight there is appropriations. Like if you want to be,
it all comes down to
there's
money.
No like two parties appropriation. Like yeah. That's it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, this has been really fun. I want to end on something that I know I saw recently on your TikTok. So I know it's a really funny story. Children's Valentines or letters that they send to members overseas. If you have one you can think of off the top of your head, what is the funniest one that you've seen? Because I'll tell you, on my submarine, whatever staff screened the ones that came to us on my sub did not do a very good job, because we got one that was folded like an accordion. And when you like unfolded it, it was a human centipede. A literal child's drawing of a human.
Creativity, though! The creativity! So
and honestly, brought us as much, if not more, joy than the actual cute drawings. It got hung up. It was appreciated in a way.
We have very specific places that we will send those to. Like so all those ones that I filtered out, that went to our National Guard armory. Like,
yeah.
I knew those Army reservists were going to fucking love that. They were going to love it.
Right. I like to think that somebody was like, you know who would appreciate this? Submariners. Submariners would appreciate this.
Exactly.
What's up?
I think the most, like, the funniest one was, because it was deep. It was just, like, it was just the healthcare. Like, that's all it said. And it was like a heart, like, you knew it was going to a veteran. This is like a third grader. It was like doing a fight and a dig. I was like, this has to be, is it sarcastic? I don't know. But it was like, and it was like the healthcare, and it was decorated. And I was like, this shit's hilarious. I'm sorry. That's so funny. Like, how does a third grader know
the
VA has shit healthcare?
Like some third grader is just like, watch this. I have satire and comedy on lock.
Like, yes.
Right. They're about 15 years away from working on SNL. It's going to be great.
Yeah, definitely my favorite time of year. And we actually got a letter. We got a letter in the mail from a veteran who got one, because we have these little clear stickers that we'll put on the back of every card. Like, you know, provided by Congressman so-and-so's office and made by local school children, just so people feel like where the fuck this card come from. And I'm glad that we do that, because we had a veteran make a, he hand wrote a letter like, hey, I got two of your Valentine's cards. It was really sweet. And it just made my day. Just thank you. Keep doing the program. And I was like, oh, oh my God.
That's the stuff that keeps you going on those days when it's like nothing good.
Oh, yeah. I forwarded it to everyone in the office. I was like, everyone needs some feel good.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with me. This has been really helpful for me. I think it's going to absolutely change some minds among my audience, because I know before I started calling my elected officials to just be like, hey, it's me again. I have a problem.
Yeah.
I also was very afraid and very unaware of what you guys could do.
Because it's someone like me answering the phone. Like, we're not scary at all. I promise.
Yeah. I think I really thought at the beginning that if I like called the number on the website, I was going to get like my elected official, and I was going to be like wasting someone very important. Like, not that you're not very important, you are, but like it was going to like ring the red phone on the president's desk, and I was going to be like, I have an issue.
Because our boss was like, hey, should we do a? He was joking around the phone. He's like, should I answer? I was like, sir. You answer this phone, the other person on the end is gonna be like, wrong number. Like, they're gonna not know what to do.
Right. Or you're gonna get someone who's like, I've been waiting my whole life for this.
Oh, right. I've been waiting. Like,
talk about
the world debt ceiling, sir.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well, this has been super awesome. Before you go, any channels, plugs you'd like to give?
No, what are the, I don't have anything else. Just my TikTok.
Yeah, Skeeter McGavin on TikTok. If you want to laugh, cry, see some good advocacy. It's been fun follow for me. And obviously, you know, you're huge on the MilTalk community. So we appreciate
it. Yay! My peoples.
I know. I was so disappointed. Personally disappointed. I did not make the top 10 MilTalkers when you made that one, but you picked all the good people, so it's fair enough.
Oh, I know. I need to do another one because I've had a bunch more that I've found that I'm like, oh my gosh, you're freaking awesome. Like, you're hilarious.
Right. I feel like it goes through waves. Like every 6 months we get like a new influx of hilarious and creative people. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much. I'll let you.
Yeah. Yes, she's Cinnamon, do you want to say hi?
Hello.
Okay. It's actually her 15th birthday today. She is 15th puppy.
I'm only going out and getting a learner's permit.
I know. Your stink face. I love you.
So cute. So cute.
Thank you so much for listening this week. I think even though this episode was a little different and didn't necessarily talk about a skill, it's definitely a resource. And using that resource is a skill. The knowledge of that resource is so important. For military leaders, whatever you care about, you can amplify that voice by using these offices, these congressional staffers and their representation. The easiest way when I need to contact them is literally just Google their name or Google who is my representative. Every congressperson or representative website that I've ever interacted with has been super easy to navigate. They've either had a contact form that was really easy to find and fill out, or they've had email addresses, phone numbers, or all of the above. So use it as a resource, right? There's 400 plus people. Every one of them has an office, and at least a couple of them represent you and your interests. They want to help you get eyes on issues. They want to help you provide data about changes that you want. They want to help you change policies or legislation and make things better. So thank you so much. I hope this was useful, even though it was a little different. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks because I'm on travel. So I hope you have an awesome middle of your March.